Hi, it's Kate Brownfield from ADHDKidsCanThrive.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all your support. Today, my guest is Dr. Lori Day Sotels. She is an assistant professor at Butler University, where she teaches both undergraduate and graduate programs in the College of Education. She is the creator of the Applied Educational Neuroscience Certification Program, which is specifically designed to meet the needs of educators, counselors, clinicians, and administrators who work beside children and adolescents who have and are experiencing adversity and trauma. She is a prolific author of several books. One is titled Connections Over Compliance, Rewiring Our Perceptions of Discipline. And she has a new book coming out in 2024 titled Body and Brain Brilliance, a manual to cultivate awareness and practices for our nervous systems. Please enjoy our conversation. Looking forward to speaking to you today, Dr. Lori. Let's just dive in and get started. I thought kind of a good place to start would be if you could just update us on the state of our culture, school, and discipline system, especially since we're coming out of COVID. Like, what is going on?
I think we are, as Dr. Ian McGilchrist shares, we're in a meaning crisis. We're still post-pandemic teaching and learning and living. And there are many facets to where our culture is today. I feel that many of our children are picking up on the emotional contagion in their families and communities. You know, there are, you know, just many, many kind of residual pieces from the pandemic that, whether it's been job loss or, you know, just significant poverty, where there's been, you know, just kind of a break in the system. And so we know that our children and adolescents, and I am in the schools every 2 days, every week, they're coming in, as we say, rough, I think, from the social loss that they experienced over the last few years. There's been just a kind of a tangible, kind of physical and verbal aggression towards each other. The children are really edgy with each other. So it's not just, you know, with authority. And so it's just a challenging time because behaviors are the indicator that the nervous systems are struggling.
Yeah.
And we know how contagious we are emotionally to each other. And so we were just talking about this in my fifth grade classroom with a lot of fighting and aggression last week, but we learned that a lot of the families were struggling with each other, that know each other and were struggling. So I'm kind of rattling on, but there are a lot of pieces to this. There's a lot of burnout with teachers right now. We have teacher shortages, our discipline referrals, our discipline systems, the number of infractions are rising. And so it's just a really interesting time. And I use the word interesting intentionally because we as human beings are resilient. And as we know, the nervous system is very adaptable and it is always working to find a balance. And that's a part of, and we have this beautiful plasticity that is a part of our architecture. And so we'll get through it. We will get through it.
Let me ask you, what role is phones playing in all of this dysregulation that you're seeing in our culture and our school life?
Well, social media is playing a significant role because when children, when adolescents are on electronics, when they're on their phones, it can be almost a shutdown dissociation response. You know, you kind of become robotic. And so that just really shuts down the regions, the areas of the brain that we need for attention, for working memory, for problem solving, for being creative, and for emotional regulation. So that's a part of that too. And then the social part of that is that we are always needing as human beings to be seen and heard and felt. And so when that doesn't happen, when maybe someone posts something on Instagram or on, you know, TikTok, and there are not enough likes or no one sees that, that creates dysregulation in the nervous system as well.
Yeah. Okay. So it's all connected.
Connected.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to get into it, but I just, when we're talking about the state of school and stuff, I do want to get your opinion because I love what you advocate for, what you write about. Schools have to be a part of valuing the emotional side that kids bring into the classroom. But the way our educational system is set up is that it only values cognition over everything else. So is that part of the disconnect?
It's a huge part of the disconnect. And that's what I spend 24 hours a day working through right now. Because we are sensory emotional creatures. We are cognition. We can't even access cognition in the cortex if we are not feeling safe and we aren't feeling connected. And this is not how, and I'm going to generalize, this is not how most educators were trained in their pre-service. There's a big gap in how we're training teachers because in how we're training teachers, there is still an emphasis on cognition. We live in a cortical world. We live in a world where words are everything, just word and mouth talk. And we have neglected the sensory pieces, that the integral sensory, I want to say this in a clear way. We are sensory creatures, and that's our identity when we come into the world. We are our wetness. We are our rhythm. We are touch. We are pressure. And we get conditioned out of our bodies as we become older. And yet our children, when they are reintroduced to the language of the nervous system, they get it immediately. They pick up on it because at 4 years old, 5 years old, 6, 7, 8, 9, they are, the plasticity of that kind of implicit memory is still there. So huge disconnect in our schools with regard to an emphasis on academics and cognition, and then also how we are, it as really as a world, but as a nation, handling discipline challenges because we're only looking at behaviors. We're not delving underneath the behavior to really understand the dysregulation of the nervous system.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so can you describe to us, what are symptoms of dysregulation? What does that look like?
Yeah, so symptoms of dysregulation are when the nervous system has moved into a survival state. And when I say survival, it is when our brains and bodies are either mobilizing energy to run from a stressor or to fight off a stressor, or we feel so overwhelmed that we begin to disconnect from the world around us, and we even disconnect from ourselves. And that is what we now understand, not just as a freeze response, but it is an immobilized shutdown, dissociative response. And that is those survival states negate reasoning, logic, rewards, consequences, creativity. I mean, when we are living in those survival states, we are all about feeling safe. We are scanning the environment. Dysregulation can be defined as scanning the environment unconsciously for anything that feels unfamiliar, threatening, dangerous, unsafe. And so it's not necessarily physical danger or a physical threat, but it could be an emotional. Somebody might be signaling to us an emotional, you know, just emotional signal that feels very, very harmful or feels very uncomfortable as well.
Wow. Okay. And how many of our kids overall are kind of showing up in our school system dysregulated for some reason beyond even ADHD? This is the ADHD Kids podcast. But I think what I'm learning to beyond ADHD, there's a lot of kids who are coming in this, living in this like stressful state. So is it more than the majority of kids who are showing up today?
So, you know, and again, that's a hard question for me to answer definitively, but the numbers of anxiety, the children and the adolescents who are showing up with some significant anxiety and some significant depression, that's on the rise. Mm-hmm. And we see that nationally through the CDC, and we see, you know, how suicidal ideation and depression are on the rise, specifically between the ages of 10 and 14. Those statistics came out, the state of our children at a statewide level and then at a national level. I think those are available at this time. So we are seeing an increase in anxiety. But here is what I want to say too, Kate, is that I don't want to pathologize that, because I think we're in a really good place to help our children and adolescents understand what's beneath those feelings. You know, being anxious, feeling sad, feeling overwhelmed, that is our nervous system speaking to us, sometimes shouting at us and asking for what it needs. And when that's empowering for our children, that is relieving. It's relieving for adults to know that my body is working for me and not against me. So I really don't want to sound dire here. I mean, yes, we have an exorbitant amount of children and adolescents walking into our schools across this country dysregulated. But there is awareness now of that dysregulation. So that's critically important. And there are opportunities now to not only reach beneath the behavior, to help families and educators understand what's under that depression, but also what can we do? How do we get out in front of those behaviors that are manifesting such strong emotion?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so strong emotion comes into schools all the time, right? Can you define for us the difference between, I think this applies to families at home too, when you talk about it in the educational system, the difference between punishment and discipline.
It absolutely is about all of us. So this is a big part of our framework, applied educational neuroscience, and it's the first of four pillars. To begin with, I think punishment moves us backwards. Those are practices that can, and I want to say unintentionally, escalate the nervous system, reactivate the nervous system, and can be re-traumatizing for children and adolescents who are experiencing significant adversity and trauma in their lives. So we're really almost reinforcing practices that say to a child or to an adolescent, this is who you are. And we don't mean to do that. Discipline, on the other hand, is really about sitting beside each other, sitting beside my students, sitting beside my own children, and providing experiences that they can embody, that can bring about sustainable social and emotional health, not just compliance or obedience. But I want to really create the environment and the culture and the practices that are structured, boundaried, safe, predictable, and can create a sense of autonomy as well. That's discipline.
That's discipline. Okay. And then why do we get afraid, though, if somebody who's like neurodiverse or different has a, you know, they have a hard time kind of fitting into that context nicely? Sometimes they challenge those boundaries, right? And then we become afraid as the right. authoritative person, right? So what's your advice on that? Because I think that's where it breaks down, right? Fear comes from the adult. And then all hell breaks loose. So how, give us like your wisdom around how to manage that.
Well, behavior management is never about our students. And that's a really big paradigm shift. Behavior management, discipline, is about the adults. And so when we think about our neurodivergent populations, when we think about children who come in with a history of traumatic or adversarial experiences, we have to understand that it is about our nervous system. As a mom, as a teacher, I have to be aware of when my heart starts to beat fast based on a student's response, or I get sweaty, or I, you know, feel myself becoming tense and tight and armoring. So that's the first thing I want to say. This is about us. And we have to also be very aware of the lens that we are looking through when we discipline, because if it's coming from our agenda and our experiences, we are missing the rich, diverse, equity world of so many of our children, because we all experience co-regulation in different ways. We find some calm and steadiness in a variety of ways. So we really have to we have to follow the agenda of the child. And we have to ask students. Nobody asks, I shouldn't say nobody, rarely do we ask our children, what would feel soothing to you? What would feel comforting? How can I help you move through this time? What do you need right now? These are some questions, but they have to be from my nervous system that is emotionally safe and available. Because if I'm not being authentic, then that is not going to cultivate connection or strengthen the relationship with that child.
Has the alignment between families and school, has that gotten worse over the decades? Or
I don't know if it's become worse. I feel like our country right now in the United States, I can speak of, is very divisive. I think people are edgy. I think a lot of adults are living in survival.
Yeah.
And so when we are living in survival, there is a collective nervous system state that can be felt in a home, in a community, at a grade level, in the, you know, in the administrative offices. And so I think that, I'm not sure if it's gotten worse, but I think there is awareness of how vulnerable people are right now. You know, even adults, we become very protective and we defend, you know, when, and that shuts down the way we hear. It shuts down our ability to listen deeply. We are unable, when we cannot get to the cortex as adults, we can't reason, we can't problem solve. So I'm not sure if it's worse. I think we are in a space where the awareness is bubbling to the surface, which I'm grateful for, but it's kind of now what?
Yeah. So maybe this is going to be the breaking point for change.
I feel it is. And I don't want to sound like that's simple, easy, short term. I mean, we are in a marathon, and the educational system is sometimes one of the last systems to change. But I do feel that I, for one, am living in a time, because I've been in education over 30 years, and I look at this time, it does feel like things are escalating. It feels like behaviors are escalating, and, you know, teacher exhaustion and parent overwhelm is escalating. But I do feel it's because there is an awareness, and there is a spotlight on social and emotional health as well.
Yeah. Okay. I know. So positive change. I think from a parenting lens, when you're working with school, that can be, especially when you have an ADHD child who's not regulated, that is where the tension is, right? And there's a lot, it feels, you know, I think the kid can feel that everyone's against them. The parent feels the school's against them. The school doesn't feel like, right? It's just a big kind of like jumbled up mess. How do you get the school to, like, in the name of the child, how do you get the parent and the school and the child to prioritize sensory regulation and connection over everything else.
Oh my goodness, Kate. If I had the answer to that, that is also the work right now. This is the work. It's reaching beneath behaviors. It's understanding that our sensory systems drive everything. Yeah. So this is, you know, I'm in Chicago next week with parents and schools, and we're all coming together. And so I think one of the things that I share with educators, and I just spoke about this, is the power of validation. And I think that for us to really hear one another, meaning parents and teachers, because as a parent, as a caregiver of your child, you are their advocate. And you know the most about them. You are the expert. And so as we think about that, and I think that when we validate what we are hearing from parents, when I can validate, you know, and say to a parent, I can't imagine how frustrating this must feel to you, then we are opening up communication and collaboration because our biology is changing. Because when we feel heard and seen and we feel felt as adults, we are more apt to be more open and to share more. So I think it's both. So validation is where we begin to hear and listen deeply to one another. And for parents, and again, I work from the educational, you know, working with teachers. I work with parents too, but I always share with staff that it's very important to validate, to dampen down that stress response so that you have the ears and the mind to really listen to parents because they are the advocates, they are the experts, and then you can begin to plan and operationalize together. So, I remember our oldest son has ADHD and also social anxiety. And every year until middle school, that's when he said no more, I would write a letter to his teachers. And I would write to them everything about Andrew that I felt would be helpful for them. And I would share that I was available and that if they needed me and that I was so grateful that he was in their care, I hoped that we could work together. And that letter every year set the table. I mean,
In a positive way.
And it was very therapeutic for me as a mom because we're very protective of our children. And we also, being parents of neurodivergent children, we know that the way they learn, the way they sense, the way they move to the world can be very different and very misunderstood.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I just think there's a lot of power, and there's also a lot of research and journaling and writing out, you know, what feels kind of trapped in here.
Yeah.
And putting it out here safe.
That's great advice, because I think parents struggle with, like, how much do they disclose to the teacher? Mm-hmm. You know, how much do they, it's this. So anyway, I'm glad that you said that, because I think there's this tension of how much do you reveal to the teacher? I don't know, because there's a feeling that maybe the teacher might not notice all the behaviors. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think when I wrote the letters, I wrote it from a lens of what you could see in school and you know, what could, you know, what some of those behaviors might mean. You know, especially because Andrew also had significant social anxiety,
yeah,
and had that along with, you know, kind of a comorbid, kind of a dual diagnosis. Yeah.
Okay, Lori, can you talk to us a little bit about, I like how you shift like IEP goal language, right? Mm-hmm. To be more in the sense of creating connection, these like academic goals. Just give us a really quick highlight on that.
Yeah. So the brain is developed from the brain stem to the cortex. So the back to the front and the inside out. And when you think about brain development, and I'm being schematic and I'm oversimplifying, but for purposes here, the brain stem is all about survival and safety. The limbic system, that those temporal lobes hold the limbic system, which is, again, oversimplifying, but it's about the emotions and learning. And then the cortex is all about those executive functions and those executive functions of decision-making, problem-solving, emotional regulation. So when we think about IEPs and 504s, or when we think about supporting and resourcing our students who are struggling academically, we've got to prioritize connection and emotional regulation. And emotional regulation does not occur without thousands of moments of co-regulation. So we developed, it doesn't replace an IEP, but it's called accommodations through an ACEs lens. And for many of our children and adolescents, school is an adverse childhood experience. For many of our students, being neurodivergent can be an adverse childhood experience because we are so misunderstood. And we struggle with feeling that safety, emotional safety and connection. So the accommodations through an ACEs lens is all about the supports, the resources, sitting down with your grade level, all of the adults who touch that child throughout the day or that adolescent. And we create a plan of connection and safety, whether it is about assignments, seating, providing space and safety in the building, other adults that student might trust, might need during the day. So it has a variety of resources. But it is critical to put this into place. And it's also, I created this because as teachers, sometimes we are not predictable across grade levels or departments. You know, someone might have very low tolerance of this child's behavior, where another teacher, you know, can go with the flow. And there's a lot of inconsistency, and that's really hard on our kids.
Yes.
So that is one of the main purposes.
Okay. And that's in your book, which I'll put the link to your book on this podcast. So if a parent wants to look up specific.
Then it's on the website, and the updated versions are on the website.
Okay. So Dr. Lori, as we wrap up, what are your words of wisdom for parents who are raising ADHD kids, if we look through that lens, what's your words of wisdom for them?
Well, when you just asked me that, I got tears in my eyes because as a young mom, I wish I had checked in with my own nervous system. I was very reactive out of love, out of protection, and out of just the greatest joy of being a parent. But what I lost sight of is that our children really do know what they need. They really do. When we provide space, time, emotional safety, and most important, we are caring for ourselves, that we are very aware of when we become escalated or we get elevated in a nervous system state that serves no one. Because as a mom in survival, I am unable to co-regulate with my own child.
It's beautiful advice. Very, very wise. So thank you for sharing. I appreciate it.